Millet had also made an interior composition as part of a series of prints he called The 4 Hours of the Day. In 1889, Van Gogh made paintings after this series, but he didn't see this practice as merely copying Millet. He saw it as translating Millet into his own artistic language. The theme of agricultural labor, as dictated by the cycle of the seasons and the times of the day, greatly appealed to Van Gogh, and because of their closeness to nature, he saw them as being closer to the cycle of life and embodying a certain divinity achieved through simplicity and humbleness, a view that could be traced back to his time working as a preacher in the coal mining villages of Belgium. Van Gogh carried this theme into the out-of-doors, of course. He deeply admired the artist and writer Jules Breton, whose own paintings of agricultural laborers working in the fields prompted Van Gogh to call him the voice of the wheat. And in June 1888, Van Gogh attempted his own painting of a sower when he moved to Arles in the south of France. He left his parents' home in the Netherlands in 1885, spending a couple years in Paris before moving to Arles. In Paris, he met some artists, Camille Pissarro, Emile Bernard, and Henri de Toulouse-Lautrec, and he probably saw the last Impressionist exhibition in addition to many other important shows. All of this had a profound effect on him. The colors of his paintings brightened, and he realized that, in his words, color expresses something in itself. And here we can start to see the individual brushstrokes modeled after Impressionist brushstrokes. And most importantly, he fully embraced the Impressionist practice of painting en plein air or out of doors, setting up his easel in the fields around Arles. Van Gogh believed that the warm sunlight of the south of France would be beneficial for his health, which was ailing. But more importantly, it was an area of Europe that was foreign to him and where he could work unfettered from family pressures and tradition. Some of you may know that Van Gogh's friend Paul Gauguin made long voyages to Tahiti in search of the primitive and the exotic, but Van Gogh didn't have to go so far. He found this in the south of France, and he was content to stay there. He'd set up his easel in and around the wheat fields of Arles, observing the movements of the workers and the effects of the changing light on the landscape as the day progressed. He saw the cycle of sowing and harvesting as a symbol of the endless repetition of days, months, and seasons that constitutes the eternal aspect of daily life. His first painting of a sower, shown here, was painted at twilight. Van Gogh sent a rapid sketch of the painting to Bernard, which he annotated with a meticulous description of the colors he used in the painting. In the letter, he wrote to Bernard, "I don't hide from you that I don't detest the countryside. Since I was brought up there, snatches of memories from past times, yearnings for that infinite of which the sower, the sheaf, are the symbols, still enchant me as before." Van Gogh was ultimately dissatisfied with the first depiction of the sower, and he picked up the subject again in this subsequent composition, which he painted two versions of. By this time, he had become very interested in Japanese prints, and their influence is visible here in the flattened perspective, dark contours around the elements of the composition. Even the blossoms on the tree recall cherry blossoms in Japanese prints. Van Gogh sketched this painting in a letter to his brother Theo, which you can also see upstairs. And I should also mention that Van Gogh believed that the light in the south of France was similar to the light of Japan. He frequently compared Arles and Japan, but he had never been to Japan. So it was as it was how he imagined Japan to be in his mind. Van Gogh did not only turn his attention to outdoor scenes in the south of France, he also embraced the nightlife entertainment of Arles. This theme had appealed to Van Gogh from early on. In one letter to his brother Theo from 1876, he transcribed the following passage about Paris at night from a novel by one of his favorite authors, Émile Souvestre. "It is the hour when Paris shows herself in all her beauty. During the day, the plaster of the facades fatigues the eye with its monotonous whiteness. The heavily laden carts make the cobblestones shudder under their huge wheels. The hurrying crowds cross and collide. There is something harsh, anxious, breathless about the city. But everything changes the moment the stars come out. The white houses fade into misty shadow. Nothing is to be heard but the wheels of the carriages as they stroll along on their way to some party or other. Work gives way to leisure. See the dance halls lighting up their colonnades, the theaters opening, the tidbit stalls lining the avenues, the news vendors making their lanterns shine. I love to share this festive time, not to take part in the general gaiety, but to observe it. Like the potato eaters, the dance hall in Arles is an indoor, after-dark, multi-figure composition. Like the last painting of the sower I showed, this painting also reveals the influence of Japanese prints in the flattened planes of color framed in black outlines. Van Gogh moved on to a similar scene in this famous painting of the interior of a cafe in Arles. While he found consolation and hope in the night, he also recognized in it a potentially sinister quality. He deliberately tried to capture that sense in this painting, The Night Cafe, through his use of color and his choice of subject. Here again, Van Gogh employed discordant, contrasting colors, juxtaposing these acidic greens with this broad horizontal field of crimson and the harsh glare of the gas lamps overhead. There are only a few patrons in this cafe, and they occupy the perimeter of the composition, and they all look like maybe they should have gone home a few hours ago. That saying, nothing good happens after 2 a.m. That's this painting.
Midnight.
Midnight, even. The few, they're slumped over the tables, and the way that they're scattered around the predominantly empty room, barely gauging with one another, except for this rather amorous couple in the background, lends the scene a kind of desperateness. Adding to the sinister quality of the painting is this mysterious barkeep in the center of the room, looking out at the viewer. Van Gogh wrote to his sister Will, "I've just finished a canvas of a cafe interior at night, lit by lamps. Some poor night prowlers are sleeping in a corner. The room is painted red, and inside, in the gaslight, the green billiard table, which casts an immense shadow over the floor. In this canvas, there are 6 or 7 different reds, from blood red to delicate pink, contrasting with the same number of pale or dark greens." Van Gogh stayed up for 3 nights straight to make this painting. He described it as a dangerous place, quote, "where you can ruin yourself, go mad, commit crimes." The distorted perspective, artificial lighting, and overall, quote, "ambiance of a hellish furnace, as Van Gogh described it, were meant to evoke terrible human passions. During this time, even while painting these interior scenes, Van Gogh was still drawn to the out of doors, and he held on to the idea of painting a starry night sky. However, in the 19th century, artists were faced with the problem of how to paint outside after nightfall. With no street lamps and no portable artificial light, this was something that posed an enormous challenge to Van Gogh. Now, you might think, well, why didn't he just paint from memory? But, in fact, Van Gogh admitted to not being able to paint strictly from imagination. He always had to have something tangible to start from. So the truly dark night scenes that you see in the show upstairs were produced on the spot while he was actually working outdoors late at night with his easel set up in the cafe, or in this painting on the cobblestone streets of Arles. Van Gogh wrote to his sister Will about the painting of the terrace of a cafe and his desire to paint a starry sky outdoors in nature, but he said that he didn't know how to do it. In the middle of the letter, however, he abruptly broke off when it dawned on him, no pun intended, that he could that's bad, that he could go out into the streets and that the lanterns from the surrounding buildings would give him enough light by which to paint. The result was these two works. The painting on the left is from the Kroller Mueller Museum in the Netherlands, and on the right is a preliminary drawing of the painting from the Dallas Museum of Art. Van Gogh wrote to Will, "I was interrupted precisely by the work that a new painting on the outside of a cafe in the evening has been giving me these past few days. On the terrace, there are little figures of people drinking. A huge yellow lantern lights the terrace, the facade, the pavement, and even projects light over the cobblestones of the street, which takes on a violent pink tinge. The gables of the houses on a street that leads away under the blue sky studded with stars are dark blue or violet, with a green tree. Now, there's a painting without black, with nothing but beautiful blue, violet, and green, and in these surroundings, the lighted square is colored pale sulfur, lemon green. I enormously enjoy painting on the spot at night. In the past, they used to draw and paint the picture from the drawing in the daytime, but I find that it suits me to paint the thing straight away. It's quite true that I may take a blue for a green in the dark, a blue lilac for a pink lilac, since you can't make out the nature of the tone clearly, but it's the only way of getting away from the conventional black night. Here we see that Van Gogh is starting to get a little closer to realizing the starry night sky, but it's really still only this triangle of sky in the upper portion of the composition, and it doesn't really encompass his romantic idea of nature outside the town. That was achieved with this painting, The Starry Night Over the Rhone, which this image does not do justice to. This became his first true painting of a starry night. After painting the terrace of a cafe on the Place du Forum, Van Gogh discovered that he could set up his easel on the banks of the Rhone River, and that the combination of the light of the stars and the gas lamps of Arles might give him enough light by which to paint in this more remote spot. And he was right. Van Gogh saw this painting as one of his poetic subjects, a quality that's enhanced by the Big Dipper here in the sky, and also in the couple walking arm in arm along the riverbank. But most of all, by the way that the starry sky really dominates this composition, taking up a full half of it and dwarfing the figures. Like many of his other paintings, Van Gogh sent this one to Theo, who worked as an art dealer in Paris at the time, along with a letter saying, "Included herewith a little canvas, the starry sky at last, actually painted at night, under a gas lamp. The sky is green-blue, the water is royal-blue, the fields are mauve, the town is blue and violet. The gaslight is yellow, and its reflections are red gold and go right down to green bronze. Against the green-blue field of sky, the Great Bear has a green and pink sparkle whose discreet paleness contrasts with the harsh gold of the gaslight. Two small colored figures of lovers stroll in the foreground." Shortly afterward, he also wrote to Theo, "I believe that an abundance of gaslight, which, after all, is yellow and orange, intensifies blue, because at night the sky here seems to me, and it's very funny, darker than in Paris, and if I ever see Paris again, I'll try to paint effects of gaslight on the boulevard." So here again we get a little bit of insight into Van Gogh's methods of painting and his constant awareness of the effects of color on one another. The overarching theme uniting all these works so far is the almost spiritual properties that Van Gogh ascribed to the night hours. This was manifested in more ways than just landscapes, social, and domestic scenes. A starry sky also appears here in this portrait of Van Gogh's friend, the Belgian Impressionist artist Eugène Bach. Van Gogh realized that if he painted Bach in warm tones and set him against this midnight blue background, he would appear to glow. And this is an effect that Van Gogh enhanced by painting a subtle orange contour around Bach's head, and you can make it out here a little bit. Which causes him to stand out even more. Van Gogh wrote about Bach as a man who dreams great dreams, and therefore is a kind of poetic artist. The starry background in this portrait therefore serves two purposes. First, it reveals Van Gogh's belief in the symbolic potential of color. The radiant effect caused by juxtaposing the orange and blue and the orange highlight around Bach's head was meant to symbolize the eternal, much as a halo does in religious portraiture. And this is something that Van Gogh wrote about specifically. Second, for Van Gogh, the starry background represented infinity and the eternal, and was meant to symbolically unite all creative persons, including not only artists, but poets and writers. He employed a similar approach in the painting on the right of Gauguin's chair. Here we see more evidence of his admiration for modern literature. Instead of painting Gauguin's portrait, he's depicted in his place a couple of novels and a lit candle to stand in for his friend. Gauguin had joined Van Gogh in Arles in October 1888 at Van Gogh's and Theo's urging. Van Gogh envisioned a community of artists working together in Arles, and Gauguin's presence was the first step toward realizing that goal. However, their relationship was tumultuous, and Gauguin abruptly left Arles after 3 months, following an episode when Van Gogh, you may have all heard the story, in a fit of madness, sliced off a portion of his ear and had to be hospitalized. Nevertheless, despite their unstable relationship, Van Gogh admired Gauguin as an artist and a friend. He wrote to Theo about this painting, explaining, The seat is of greenish straw, and in the absent person's place, a lighted candlestick and some modern novels. And I think there's something especially moving about this painting, knowing that as Van Gogh was making it, he was thinking about Gauguin, and that the subject, however, was not ultimately about the physical presence of Gauguin, but the idea of him, and that's what Van Gogh sought to capture on canvas. All of this brings us back to where we started. The Starry Night not only marks the origin of the exhibition upstairs, but it also represents the culmination of many of the concerns Van Gogh was working through in his depictions of landscapes, sewers, and nightlife. Specifically, the idea of color in the night as possessing a potential for spiritual meaning. Although Van Gogh had said that he could never paint from imagination, that he needed to have something in real life as a basis for a painting or a drawing, in The Starry Night we see that he has really stretched himself in his ability to create this fantastical scene. When Van Gogh made this painting, he was living in a hospital in Saint-Rémy, just outside of Arles. Fearing another violent episode, after he recovered from cutting his ear, he voluntarily interned himself there for several months. He continued to paint the view from his window and the courtyard and the garden of the hospital, and gradually he ventured out into the surrounding countryside. The village in the bottom of the composition has been likened to the town of Saint-Rémy, but it's also been compared to the Dutch towns that Van Gogh would have been familiar with from his childhood. At the same time, the cypress trees on the left typically signified eternity and death, and were frequently found in cemeteries around France, and Van Gogh would have been familiar with this symbolism. And the Starry Night, of course, was based on countless starry nights that he would have witnessed throughout his life, but it obviously would not have appeared like this. And there have even been scientific studies to examine whether the positioning of the stars and the shape of the moon as we see it here were actually how they would have appeared when Van Gogh made the painting. And they've determined that although there were reports that June 1889, the month he painted it, were especially good for viewing the stars, we know that the moon would not have been a crescent moon such as this one. So here we have Van Gogh drawing from memory and working from imagination, with very little to build from in terms of reality. Like nighttime in general, the painting marks a period of real creative growth, when his imagination went the furthest, and he was able to summarize his sentiments about the day and the powerful and sometimes terrifying aspects of nature. So at this point, I'd like to open this talk up to questions, and we can have a discussion from there. Does anyone have any questions about Van Gogh or his concerns with the nighttime, or specific questions about the exhibition upstairs? I'd be happy to answer. Yes?
I have two questions. Actually, one of them relates to this painting. Did he work on stretched canvases? Because the borders of this one is extremely odd. You know what I'm referring to.
Do you mean that there is exposed canvas along the edges?
Yeah, a lot of time going to paint the roof. It's very uneven. A good right angle on the left hand side, mm-hmm. or on a stretch. Whereas the middle of the canvas is on the middle part of the canvas, and at the very bottom, this photograph takes it off, but there's another area in which the rare canvas comes through, so, which makes me think he just spread out canvas and painted up. Do we have any idea how he painted it?
He didn't stretch his own canvases. He was buying pre-stretched canvases, like many artists from the 19th century. He painted on a canvas that was already on a stretcher bar, already on a frame. And however, you know, over the years, sometimes stretchers can warp, and a lot of times paintings are re-stretched on new stretcher bars, and I don't know if that's the case for The Starry Night. But you're right that there is considerable raw canvas around the perimeter of the composition. You can see a little bit of it here, but
left-hand side more, and also the bottom left of the original.
Yeah, over here.
Yeah, and there's a whole piece.
Yeah.
Below these trees at the bottom left.
Right. This is cropped mainly to focus on the image itself, but there is exposed canvas. Mm-hmm. A little bit. Yeah. Oh, okay.
This time around, he didn't use much paint for this one. He actually left canvas, bits of canvas around the stars. So it's not a solid,
That there's exposed canvas around here? Can you see that upstairs? Oh, interesting. I hadn't noticed. I'll take my note.
Catalog.
Okay. Yes, and your second question.
Do we know how many days it took him to... These paintings were not finished in one setting, were they?
No. Some of them were.
You know, you couldn't get the... If he's working wet onto wet,
mm-hmm.
you couldn't get the colors.
Right. And in some cases, you can see where he was working wet on wet, and the yellow and the blue kind of blend together and make a green. You can see that in the Starry Night over the Rhone, for instance. And if you look at this painting upstairs, you can see brush strokes that actually go in between these stars and over other brush strokes. So he was at least getting most of the composition out of doors, but there's evidence that he would have touched them up later. In the Starry Night, too. And, you know, we don't know exactly how many days he took to make the Starry Night, because he didn't really write about this painting, ironically. He only mentioned it in passing. Toward the end of his life, he moved to Auvers-sur-Oise, to the northwest of Paris. And in a letter from Auvers, he wrote that he still had a canvas of A Starry Night from down there, meaning in Arles, and that's this painting. And that's really all that he ever wrote about it. So knowing, you know, how it is such a culmination of his different concerns and what an iconic work of art it's become, it's interesting to know that he didn't seem to have given it much thought himself. We don't know how long he spent on this one.
And on others?
Well, for instance, the Night Cafe that we looked at from Yale, he stayed up for 3 nights straight. So unless he wrote about it, however, you know, we don't really have any idea. Yes, sir.
He did write about the idea before, the dark tree and the
town. He did. He made other paintings, too, of dark cypresses and towns and crescent moon. There's a painting in Sao Paulo that he wrote about with some of those same motifs. So some of these elements, like the trees, the crescent moon, even the little town, appear in other paintings. Sir, you had a question?
I assume that Theo wrote letters back to Van Gogh. Did
yeah.
Examine those, and what kind of influences might he have had on?
Well, Theo was an active art dealer in Paris. We don't have all of Theo's letters to Van Gogh, unfortunately, but there are some, and Van Gogh was able to carry on a constant conversation with Theo about art in general. It was, you know, a mutual area of interest where they could come together, Vincent as a practicing artist, Theo as an art dealer. So Theo definitely had an influence. He sent Van Gogh Japanese prints from Paris when he was living in the south of France. They would write to each other about specific paintings and what certain artists were doing, such as Seurat or Pissarro. And that kind of dialogue really fostered Van Gogh's artistic growth. So Theo was a very strong influence, actually. And 6 months after... Just a little bit about the story of Van Gogh's letters and these paintings, which didn't sell during Van Gogh's lifetime. 6 months after his death in 1890, Theo died. So everything that had been in Vincent's own care went to Theo, and then when Theo passed away, it went to Theo's widow. And that's how the Van Gogh Museum and the Van Gogh Foundation and these organizations have become the kind of caretakers of such important works of art by Van Gogh. Johanna, Theo's wife, really was responsible for compiling all the letters. She published volumes of the letters and really promoted Van Gogh's work. Yes?
Do we know why he was fascinated with the night?
Well, the night appeared, you know, there were certain traditions. There was romantic tradition dealing with the night. It appeared in literature. He really seemed to embrace it as a period of solace, contemplation, but also intense creativity. He could let his mind roam free after, you know, all the concerns of the day were behind him. And out of any other time of the day, he wrote about the night the most. And a lot of the passages from the literature that we have on display upstairs are of the night. So it's just a theme that he kept coming back to. And that is what he did throughout his career. You know, he had these interests in peasant life, in agricultural labor, in this kind of, you know, spirituality found through humble way of life. And even as his style changed and he moved around a fair amount, he would still come back to these themes, just in different ways. So, yes. That one?
It looks like an abstract painting. Could you explain, like, why it looks like that? Is it the colors juxtaposed?
Well, the colors, admittedly, in this image are intensified by the reproduction. But he was looking, there are two sources here, two distinct sources. One of them was the influence of Japanese prints, which feature flat planes of color outlined in black. And secondly, there were the Cloisonniste artists working in Brittany, Paul Gauguin, Emile Bernard, Maurice Denis. These were artists who were working in this style of flattened, unmodulated planes of color with strong outlines. And I think what really gives this picture that sense of vibrancy and abstraction that you talked about is that there's so much going on in it. There are so many figures here, and he's still adhering to this kind of linear perspective where they get smaller toward the back and, you know, they overlap each other. So it's difficult once you get past this middle register here to really isolate the different figures and make out who's who. They all start to become these abstract shapes, really just alluding to the figures rather than depicting them as they would have appeared. So it is interesting. It's as though he was capturing that sense of action, the activity and the energy of the dance hall through his technique rather than through representing it exactly how it would have appeared. Yes?
Just related to this picture, I have another question. Was he influenced by
It does, yeah, both in the subject matter and in his technique. Toulouse-Lautrec was one of the artists that he met when he lived in Paris for 2 years before he moved to Arles. So there would have definitely been that influence as well.
And also, did he die in the mental
He did not die while he was in the mental hospital. He died from self-inflicted gunshot wounds in Auvers.
The lights, we talked about abstraction. They're not connected to anything.
Yeah, yeah, they're wonderful. Just these orbs of glowing light, you know. Yes, sir.
Well, wasn't there a theory that his heavy drinking of absinthe was gradually hurting his brain, and that a lot of that glowing look was a result of the heavy drinking?
I think that if anyone drinks a lot of absinthe and stays up for 3 nights in a row painting a night cafe, it's going to affect their vision of the scene. So that's definitely a part of it. You know, if Van Gogh were alive today, with today's psychology, he'd probably be diagnosed as manic depressive. But we don't really know for sure, and he had probably multiple ailments that were exacerbated from drinking and not taking care of himself. He had a poor diet. You know, it was not the picture of mental or physical health that we aspire to today. Yes, in the back.
You mentioned that he considered the failure to his first masterpiece. It made me wonder about his own opinion of his work. Did he have a sense that he was doing great work, or?
He thought this was a great painting, honestly. He, he wasn't striving to make a pretty picture. He was striving to make a picture with multiple figures that really related to the way they lived their life. This was probably a meal that they had every night, you know, potatoes and chicory, gathered around this table in this tiny dark cottage, and his use of paint was very much tied into his subject matter. So here, you know, he was still experimenting with those ideas of complementary colors I mentioned, but it's not really the dominant aspect of his painting. They're more existing in the undertones. But it was him kind of marrying technique and subject so that you couldn't really separate the two. You know, the potato eaters are painted in this dark palette that kind of does remind one of a dusty potato, you know, and the earth and the soil that they would have been working in every day. To paint them in a brighter palette in any different way would not have quite conveyed their daily existence and that mood surrounding the dinner table at night.
But in general, did he have a sense of, I mean, overall, his career, did he have a sense of that he was doing time, great timeless work? Or?
I think, yeah, he did. I think, you know, he felt that he admitted in his letters that he, you know, he had struggles as an artist. He didn't receive any formal training, and he had specific technical concerns that he was trying to work out in his paintings, but he really felt he was onto something and was ahead of his time. Okay, we're over now, so I think I'll end there. Thank you so much for coming out today. Yeah. Okay.